Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Now, as Taoiseach Micheál Martin prepares to head to Washington and meet with US President Donald Trump, he does so at a time of near unprecedented geopolitical upheaval and armed conflict within Europe and the Middle East. In the midst of such turbulence, Ireland has been pondering its own place within EU and international security and defence structures, with some people now questioning whether our military neutrality can be maintained. Well, to discuss this further, we're joined now by columnist and former senior advisor to the Labour Party, Fergus Finlay, and by retired Army officer and independent senator Dr. Tom Clonan, and you're both very welcome. Thank you for coming into us this evening. Fergus, I might come to yourself first because you wrote this column in the Irish Examiner yesterday saying that Ireland's military neutrality effectively ended last week. Can you tell me, how did you arrive at that conclusion?
Well, Tom has already introduced himself to me and described me as General Finlay. I hope I'll never beat that. I suppose the first thing I'd like to say is that this was not an easy column for me to write. I have defended Ireland's neutrality all my adult political life, even at times when it was particularly difficult to do so, like, for example, during the ethnic cleansing in former Yugoslavia, when I was actively involved in the Department of Foreign Affairs and in negotiations that were going on around that. But the world underwent a phenomenally serious and fundamental change last week. When you hear Kremlin spokespeople saying that Mr. Putin and Mr. Trump are now perfectly aligned, you know something fundamental has changed. And I think, to be blunt about it, to be the bottom line for me now, is that Ireland's security is Europe's security. Europe's security is Ireland's security. We can't defend anything. We can't defend undersea cables. We can't defend our airspace. We can't defend anything anymore without European help. I know we're investing in building up the strength of the defence forces, and that's long overdue. But we are utterly and completely now dependent on other democratic countries throughout Europe. And I believe we have to show common cause. We have no choice but to show common cause. I think that's the right thing to do, and I think it's where our strategic interest now lies.
And you think the only way to do that at this point is to give up our military neutrality?
Not the only way, by any manner of means. I mean, I hope that Ireland will continue to do what it has always done, to supply peacekeepers, to take part in humanitarian missions, to offer humanitarian support to the rest of the world. Ireland already leads the world in many ways in terms of the humanitarian support it has offered to Ukrainian refugees here. But I think the days of us saying thanks but no thanks to any kind of military involvement are over. I wish it weren't so, but I believe it is so.
Tom, what do you think of that?
Well, first of all, I mean, I read Fergus's column yesterday with great interest, and it contains quite a number of inaccuracies to begin with. But I think that's possibly because your experience is rooted in the Department of Foreign Affairs some 30 years ago. So when you were in that position, Ireland did one thing for one agency. We did peacekeeping for the UN. But we now do peace enforcement, which, and in your column you say that we've never joined fighting forces. We have. Yeah. We've joined them in Afghanistan, in Somalia, in East Timor, to name just a few places, on several continents, in Kosovo. So, you know, we have actually shouldered the wheel, but we have a policy of military non-alignment. And notwithstanding the fuss in the White House and the posturing around the Kremlin and what might happen next in Ukraine, now is not the time to abandon our shared international values. The UN is the ultimate arbiter of global security. That's by collective agreement internationally. And we have a very proud tradition of involvement in that. There's a couple of things, Sarah, I would say. There's been a number of myths put out in the media in the last couple of weeks. One of them is that we should be ashamed of our neutral status, or that our international partners are somehow, that our international partners are fed up with it, or that they disapprove of it.
I haven't said that either, Tom.
That's completely, I'm not talking about you, Fergus, that is completely and utterly inaccurate. Mm. Our international partners, and I have 25 years of experience of dealing with them, understand that that's a national competence. We're seen as good international partners. And
Are we? You do hear that. You do see reports along those lines, particularly from the British, that, you know, we're not pulling our weight.
Well,
we're not spending the money.
I work very closely with my counterparts in 57 nations in the OSCE. And as an inter-parliamentary representative, we've very close relationships with our British partners. They have no issue with our military neutrality. That's a complete myth. Six counties of this country are already in NATO.
Yeah.
They don't have an issue with it.
So what they do have an issue with, I think, is the lack of defence spending. So I think you're both aligned on that, are you, that we need to increase defence spending. Is that the case?
I hope we are. I don't know. I'm not going to speak for Tom. I mean, I'm like Tom has accused me of making all sorts of inaccuracies, and I will bow to his immeasurably superior expertise in most of these matters. Although I do think anyone who describes what happened in the White House last Friday as a bit of a fuss is in no position to accuse other people of inaccuracy. But look, the reality is the world has undergone a radical and dramatic change. It is now, we do not now have a leader of the free world. The leader of the free world abandoned his post last week and has no interest in resuming that post. I listened, God help me, how sad a life I have. I listened to his State of the Union address last night. Dishonest, boastful, hectoring. This is not a man that we can trust.
Yeah, so that all may be the case, and there will be some people who agree with you, and I've seen some people say that he's resigned his post as the leader of the free world. How does us giving up our military neutrality help that situation? Or is this not
doesn't,
the time it
doesn't,
when,
doesn't, Sarah, it
when
doesn't.
Our position as you know, a neutral country, interested in peace, advocating for peace, is this not when we should be moving more in that direction as opposed to in the other direction?
The contribution we can make is infinitesimal. The size of our defence budget now, as Tom knows better than I, is miserly, to put it more strongly than that. The contribution we can make is tiny. But we have to be prepared to make it. That's my only point. And it's not a point I make lightly or with
And why?
Pleasure.
Can you explain that to me? What difference does that make to, as you say, we're a small country, it's not going to make any difference anyway, really, what we can do in terms of fighting on the ground, realistically. So what difference does that make? How does that help anybody?
Because there is a dwindling number of countries that are rooted in democratic values and that have common cause around peace and security. By and large, not exclusively by any manner of means, but by and large, we call those countries Europe. And we are part of that. And we have to be prepared to contribute to Europe's security and Europe's defence. That's my only point.
Okay, Tom?
Well, I mean, look, that's just so... Look, there's a big disconnect between what President Trump says and what he does. For example, he says that he's going to turn Gaza into a Mediterranean resort. That's not going to happen. That will never happen.
Night.
That will never happen.
Well,
now, and in terms of, and in terms
though,
of his commitment...
We heard that before the election, and we have heard that for the last couple of years. You know, he says one thing, he does another. He's actually doing a lot of the stuff now that he said he would do,
okay.
Or he's attempting to do
to
it.
So, to the point, he's not going to ethnically cleanse Gaza. That's never going to happen. You can't force 2 million Palestinians out of Gaza into countries that
But he has today paused military intelligence to Ukraine.
Yeah, well, no, just to the point. So in relation to NATO and his commitment to the defence of Ukraine, the United States remain the anchor tenant of NATO in Europe. The United States Supreme Headquarters of the Allied Powers in Europe is still there. And all this week, the USA's permanent mission to NATO in Brussels have been publishing comments to the effect that they're participating in Baltic collective defence exercises. So now is a time for cool and calm heads. But if I could say one thing, the government has announced that it's going to do away with the triple lock. And that is, now I would agree with Fergus, that is a seismic shift. Because by doing so, they've removed you, or they will remove UN authorization from any government's decision to send Irish men and women to war zones. And what that effectively means is that instead of having a triple lock, as it was so called, we will now have no lock. In other words, any future Irish government, by a simple majority, can decide to send any number of Irish troops to any war zone anywhere in the world. And that will have practical, political and diplomatic implications for our military non-alignment.
I
think Irish people need to be very, very mindful of that.
Yes, indeed. But I want to bring you back for a second to what Fergus is saying, which is that there's been a fundamental change in the world order where we see Russia and the US aligned and Europe really in the middle. And that at this time, what Fergus is saying is Ireland cannot step back and say, we support you politically. We're not politically neutral. We're not politically neutral. We support you in what you're trying to do. But when it comes to actually boots in the ground, when it comes to defence spending, any of that, we're out. And he's saying we can't do that now at this time.
Well, no, what Fergus was saying in his article was that we should join the fight. And I presume when he says we, he doesn't mean himself. He means my children, your children,
yes, yeah,
the children of people listening and potentially our grandchildren. And, you know, we used to have a saying as junior officers when I was in the army, you know, these old war horses, retired generals would come in and we used to refer to them and say, once a fighting cock, now a feather duster. Only Fergus, you've never served. You've never been in a hostile environment. And you reference Bosnia and the former Yugoslavia. I was there at the end of that conflict as a UN, as an OSCE election supervisor. I've witnessed conflict on all, both in Europe and in the Middle East. And I can tell you, we should not lightly commit our young men and women to conflict zones or to war zones on the basis of a simple government majority. That
okay,
is dangerous.
Can I let Fergus respond to that,
well,
please?
Well, I mean, I'm going to have to say, Tom, I think this is desperately unworthy of you. Really cheap and unworthy. I would give my right arm at the drop of a hat to put myself in harm's way rather than any of my grandchildren or my children or their generation. I can't. I wish I could, but I can't. Okay? And to go around comparing me to feather dusters is just a cheap shot, Tom, which is way beneath you, way beneath you. I was going to say that I utterly agree with most of the arguments that you have put forward, most of them. But when you parade these kind of cheap, nasty shots around, you don't deserve to be listened to.
Well, Fergus, you know, your manufactured outrage. When I read your article yesterday, riddled with inaccuracies and breathless assertions about joining a fight, I must say, I very rarely get annoyed, but I found it. And first of all, you denigrate the service of Irish troops overseas.
No, I do not.
You did, because no, you said that we never joined the fight. Thousands of Irish troops have joined peace enforcement missions and have put their lives on the line in Europe, in Africa, and in the Asian continent, and you denigrate them in your...
So I denigrated my father then. I denigrated my grandfather, both of whom served.
I don't know anything about that. I'm only talking about what you wrote in your
assumptions,
article. So your manufactured outrage. I can give you a reason why I'm annoyed. Because I have four children who are of military service age. And what you're suggesting explicitly in your article, and I'm talking about evidence here, you're suggesting that they should go and join some sort of a military coalition to fight. To fight what? To fight where? What's unspecified
Nobody
conflict?
Knows the answers to those questions, Tom. Nobody knows the answers to those questions.
So why why advocate?
You can be absolutely,
so why advocate for the
you
unknown?
You can be absolutely certain.
Do you know what it is? It's you the unspeakable advocating the unknowable.
Rubbish.
For the, but that's what you wrote in your article. Own it. Own it, Fergus.
I own everything
and less
I write.
Of the manufactured
I own
outrage.
Everything I write. I own everything I write.
So basically what we've had is a parade of people who will never fight, who have never served, who are advocating again and again and again that Ireland should somehow dispense with its military neutrality and that for some reason Irish men and women, our children, our grandchildren, should participate in some conflict.
Can I give you, Tom, can I give you a potential example, which is that Europe may find themselves deploying boots on the ground in Ukraine or in a European country to fight Russian troops. So if that's a specific example, and Ireland on the western edge of Europe stays where we are and says we're out of this fight, we support you, but we're not going to support you. What then?
Well, Ireland might decide to contribute troops to such a multinational force. I mean, that remains to be seen. Like, we haven't seen as yet the details of any agreement might be reached between Ukraine, the Kremlin and Washington. We haven't seen the details of that.
But sorry, just for clarity then, when you say we might decide to put troops in the ground, are you saying in a peacekeeping capacity or do you mean to fight alongside the European troops?
Well, we have like I said to Fergus at the beginning, you know, 30 years ago, Ireland did peacekeeping for the UN. We now do peacekeeping and peace enforcement for the UN, for the European Union and for NATO. We've been doing that for almost, well, over 20 years at this stage. So now, without being militarily aligned, which is what Fergus advocated in his piece, we can still participate meaningfully and support our neighbours and be good partners. But, it just depends on what the deal looks like and whether or not they go to the UN Security Council and look for a resolution. That's the way things stand at present. But what the government is proposing to get rid of the triple lock, I'm just simply saying that if we allow a simple government majority of the day, I think that's risky. We don't know what a future government might look like or what they might commit troops to. So in the absence of that, I'm saying when it comes to the deployment of troops, we should have qualified majority voting in the Dáil, where, let's say, standard QMV, standard qualified majority of 65% or two-thirds
right, and that's for peacekeeping
to send our troops over.
By the way, I have no objection.
A final word to yourself.
Well, I have absolutely no objection to a qualified majority vote on an issue as fundamental, as important as that. Absolutely no. What I do object to, and what I think only makes sense now, is I do object to Russia having a say on whether or not we participate in anything.
Yeah.
Absolutely
okay.
object to that.
And can I just ask you very finally, Fergus, to Tom's point about, for listeners listening to this who may have sons or daughters, and the thought of sending them anywhere.
It's horrendous. Horrendous, Sarah. It's unthinkable. To quote Tom, it's unspeakable. But it may well be the future that we have to face.
Well, I've experienced it, and I can tell you we don't. We don't have to experience it, and we shouldn't be advocating for it. We should maintain our unique position that has served us very, very well as a republic, and we should not, you know, abdicate our decision making to some kind of a military alliance. We should get to choose what conflicts we get involved in on a case by case basis, and that's what we should do for our children and for our grandchildren.
That is not an argument for military neutrality, by the way, Tom.
Well, it certainly is.
It isn't. Case by case involvement.
Well, you wrote your article. Have a read of mine, and you'll see I set it out very explicitly and very forensically what our neutrality consists of in terms of military non-alignment and how we can protect that.
Case
and I think
by
Irish
case
people,
involvement,
based in this type of narrative,
case by case involvement,
based on the misinformation,
the
disinformation that's in play at the moment, I think Irish people should look for a referendum to, you know, copper fasten their neutrality in our constitution.
It's a very interesting debate, and I know it brings up people's emotions, certainly, and it's on our door. The debate is on our door. Thank you both very much for joining us this evening. That is Fergus Finlay and Tom Clonan.